And I think as crypto develops further, DEXs and DeFi platforms must be multi-chain as well. The way I see crypto is that it's on the development path of the internet. To become part a key part of that multi-chain future, PancakeSwap has to expand multi-chain and has to be focused on where the users are and also where the technology is scaling towards.
We've teamed up with the Wormhole Foundation, stewards of the Wormhole Protocol, the leading interoperability platform powering cross-chain transfers for 200-plus multi-chain teams. Claim your unique Wormhole NFT just for 0x Research listeners today. Before we get into today's episode, just a quick disclaimer. The views expressed on this podcast by either myself or any guests are their personal views and do not represent the views of any associated organization. Nothing in this episode should be construed or relied upon as financial, technical, tax, legal, or other advice. All right, let's jump into the episode. All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of 0x Research. We have a great episode lined up today with Jeff Mochi, the head of PancakeSwap, a leading DEX on Binance Smart Chain. Today is Thursday, March 7th, and this episode will be airing on Friday, March 15th. As a reminder, be sure to use code 0xresearch10 at app.blockworksresearch.com for 10% off your annual subscription. And for those of you who are already subs, I'm sorry, but this is only for first-time customers. All right then, on to the interview with Chef Mochi, the head of PancakeSwap. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thanks, Ren, and I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. A lot of our listeners may not be caught up on PancakeSwap or know much about its journey. Do you mind sort of setting the stage a little for listeners, explaining how PancakeSwap is a differentiated DEX as well as the sort of previously implemented V3 upgrades?
Sure, I'm happy to do so. So in a nutshell, in 2023, PancakeSwap went into a highly focused period with the main aim of becoming the best multi-chain DeFi platform. So specifically what that means is that the PancakeSwap kitchen team had an aim to make it so that users could access all the core DeFi functions easily on multiple different chains. And this would include providing liquidity, including swapping and doing various forms of staking, launch pads, you know, etc. on many different chains, without having to learn the newest upcoming DeFi Lego and jump around various projects to enjoy the benefits of all that is developing within crypto. And so this is what we mostly achieved in 2023. Now, talking about our V3 specifically, what we did was we improved on Uniswap V3's implementation via two methods. So the first is providing on-chain farming rewards for LPs that is based on a deflationary reward token. So I think as Ren, you would know, many first-generation DEXs did this rewarding of liquidity providers with their native DEX token rewards. However, many of these tokens were hyperinflationary by design, and so their prices were not sustainable in the longer run. And so many of these tokens collapsed, and many of the liquidity providers then left these DEXs because trading fees were simply not sufficient to cover impermanent loss suffered by them. And so what we did as an improvement over the V3 model was to provide our cake tokenomics on top of it, and is provided in a way where the PancakeSwap team and the protocol could buy back all the cake tokens that we emit to LPs as rewards. So what we've achieved in V3 is a model where we could subsidize impermanent loss suffered by liquidity providers with a financially sound token model that keeps them perpetually in the liquidity pools. So that's the first thing. And the second major improvement we made was introducing the VCake vote escrow model into V3. And we do believe this is a first. So we've grown a voting ecosystem which allows altcoin projects to build liquidity in a concentrated manner on PancakeSwap. And this is a significant benefit. So previously, the largest venue for building liquidity with the sort of voting mechanism was Curve Finance, but which used a stable swap pricing methodology. But V3's capital efficiency is, depending on how you provide liquidity, between 3 to sometimes up to a few hundred times higher than the stable swap model. So what that means is projects can build deep liquidity on PancakeSwap V3 much cheaper than using the same model on Curve. And they can also receive kick commissions to help them build liquidity quickly, as opposed to, you know, Uniswap, which has no incentives reserved for building up altcoin projects. So to kind of end that off, you know, V3 has enabled PancakeSwap to become a significant multi-chain DEX in 2023. But you know, we do think there's still many obstacles that we're trying to deal with.
Yeah, I really appreciate this sort of intro, explainer. And it seems like at least with V3, you guys managed to take sort of a bit of the best of like each DEX and sort of incorporate it into PancakeSwap. And you mentioned that there are still some obstacles with where V3 is today. And I know you guys have some exciting plans. So would you mind diving a little into just where V3 is today and sort of some areas in which PancakeSwap is still lacking?
Sure. So V3 today allows PancakeSwap to execute a lot of trading volume with relatively little capital. So to give you a comparison, PancakeSwap V2, which used the non-concentrated liquidity model, the simplified distributed liquidity model, we had about, as of today, I think 5 to 6 times more liquidity in V2 at the very peak. But in comparison, V3 is now executing way more volumes than V2. And so we are on BNB chain, as I think we're most well known on, but we're also on Ethereum, we're on Arbitrum, and we're on 9 different chains. And with relatively little liquidity on Ethereum, we are now the 4th largest DEX in terms of trading volume on Ethereum mainnet. So that's where V3 is at currently. And then talking about the shortcomings of V3, we think there are 4 main ones. I think the first is PancakeSwap V3 is still relatively inflexible in terms of providing pricing models for assets. So as you may have seen also in recent years, there are assets that don't necessarily follow the XY equals to K pricing model. One example would be for, I think social tokens tend to use some kind of bonding curves that, you know, start from zero and go up as more people buy them. And, you know, it doesn't really follow the same sort of curve. And I think the second thing that V3 lacks is execution functions that are comparable with centralized exchanges. Then third, you know, the perpetual problem of providing liquidity is impermanent loss. And that's definitely something that V3 also suffers from. And lastly, if we're talking about, you know, gas fees, especially on Ethereum mainnet, it's very pricey for users, whether it's liquidity providers or swappers, to be, engaging in a lot of swaps. So I think these are all challenges that V3 faces and needs to, you know, be improved on in the next iteration.
No, I really appreciate the frankness in some of the problems that V3 is facing. And I think the main goal of today's conversation is to sort of go through how you guys are going to tackle those problems. And I know you guys have a huge upgrade coming up that we are personally very excited for, termed PancakeSwap V4. And for those listening, it's comprised of a 3-layer architecture. I'm going to put something on the screen right now. The 3-layer architecture includes the accounting layer, the AMM layer, and the custom layer. And so, Mochi, would you mind walking through each of these layers in a bit of detail for the listeners?
Sure. So before I dive into the details, the entire, the 3 layers in together is really what is PancakeSwap V4. But let's, you know, break it down into the components to understand how we've built them up and what they are set out to do. Let's start from the left. So that's the accounting layer. So this is a fairly simple layer. The accounting layer is put simply a layer that holds token balances across all liquidity pools. So, whatever pairs of liquidity you're providing to PancakeSwap, as opposed to in the current V3 where, you know, there is a pool for, let's say, ETH-USDC, USDC-BNB, in the next version of PancakeSwap, all this will be simply be put in one layer. And so all funds, regardless of what liquidity pools, are in this vault layer called the accounting layer. And so all it does is it interacts with users, you know, whether you're a trader or you're a liquidity provider, to take the token that you're swapping and return the token that you're supposed to receive when you interact with PancakeSwap V4. The next layer is the AMM layer. And this, I think, is the first interesting layer. This layer houses all current and future pricing curves that will exist on PancakeSwap V4. So at launch, PancakeSwap V4 will support the most common AMM pricing model, which is the Uniswap V2 pricing model, XY equals OK, but under the V3 approach, which is the concentrated liquidity AMM, or more commonly known as the XY equals OK model. We will also support the liquidity book model, which is the X plus Y equals OK model that is used in Trader Joe. But aside from these two pricing models, the AMM layer is envisioned with a larger goal of being able to house any pricing curves and any pricing logics created in the future. So taking as an example, the bonding curve that we previously raised as an example, this is something that can be incorporated into the AMM layer. So the reason for doing it in this manner is that the existing two AMM models that are supported out of the box in V4 is, like I previously raised, not suitable for every single asset out there. And so if there is in the future a better pricing model or even new pricing models for assets that need a different pricing model, PancakeSwap V4 is built such that these new models can be added in. So aside from the price bonding curve, you could add in the stable swap curve, which curve finance users, even experimental ones, for some of your very DeFi native users, you might have heard, for example, of Squeeth, which is the Square ETH pricing curve. There's no reason why any of these can't be added into the PancakeSwap V4 AMM layer. And so this is built flexibly for what comes in the future. Lastly, let's look at the right. So that's the custom layer. The custom layer is where hooks or extra logics that can be executed by a user, whether they're a trader or liquidity provider, stays. So this is where if any developer, whether it's PancakeSwap or any third-party hook developer, if they created specific functionalities, then traders and LPs will be able to access them at this layer. And what this layer does is it interacts with the AMM layer together to execute very interesting logics upon swaps or liquidity provision in conjunction with whichever AMM pricing curve that you think is suitable for the asset. So at a high level, this is what PancakeSwap V4 is doing. And if I were to sum it up, it's really the three layers work together to provide a perspective on liquidity provision where users can provide liquidity to any kind of pricing curve that they think is suitable for the assets. And then there is a layer that provides a rich level of functionality for swaps and liquidity providers to execute more complicated functions that they can do now at V3.
Yeah, that's super cool. I think one of the key takeaways I have here is that this allows liquidity providers or people sort of like initiating liquidity pools to have much more expressibility and customizability over what the liquidity pool looks like. And I think that's a trend that we've seen across DeFi as a whole as you sort of like progress through the different stages from sort of very simple models, whether that's like DEXs or lendings or money markets to like more and more sophisticated models that allow users to customize the sort of exposure they have. And it's cool to see PancakeSwap trend towards that direction too in V4. There's one thing here that I want to sort of double down on, and that's hooks, because that's where a lot of the expressivity comes in. And, leading DEXs such as Uniswap have leaned into hooks pretty heavily, even though they aren't live. And hooks are kind of like externally deployed contracts that enable this greater customization over the liquidity pools, right? And I'm excited to hear from you. What type of things are you expecting people to be built here in terms of hooks?
Sure. I think hooks really are a general category which try to help DEXs compete with centralized exchanges. At least initially, I think this is what hooks will achieve. So personally, as a user of a DEX today, I find, like you said, that DEXs are very simple compared to, a centralized exchange or even traditional Web2 TradFi financial institutions. That said, DEXs already provide 24/7 availability of liquidity and also permissionless price discovery. So there's no such thing as market hours, right? The market is always on, and you don't wait for anybody to quote you a price. The liquidity pool is always providing a price to you as a user. So then what it should be able to do next is to do everything and anything a user would want or ever want from a centralized exchange or from a Web2 TradFi firm. So I do think that the hooks that will initially develop are going to be focused on helping liquidity providers and swappers and projects alike to tap on feature-rich functions that currently exist on centralized exchanges and TradFi, platforms. So these are things like your DCA functionality, your limit order functionality, your stop loss functionality. And then I think going forward, as more things get developed, you start to look at more complicated functionality. I'm not sure if this is in the future available, but even things like dark pool trading, which is institutional only, feature may actually be possible through hooks, even though that might be a very complicated one. So this is we do hope that initially, I think a lot of the functionality is borrowed from TradFi, but and centralized exchanges. But over the longer term, liquidity provisioning by LP pools is different from Web2 and centralized exchanges. So we hope there's something interesting that is unique to LPs, that's being built on V4 as well.
No, that doubtful idea is really cool. I never thought about it. Maybe some combination of like ZK or like FHG to sort of enable that functionality. I guess as an objective podcast host, right, obviously PancakeSwap exists in a really competitive DEX landscape, right? And so the question I do have to ask is, why would a developer build a hook on PancakeSwap over someone like Uniswap?
Sure, no, I think that's a very valid question. So the way we have designed PancakeSwap V4 is such that we are not forcing developers to choose. We don't think in the first place that they should be forced to choose between Uniswap and PancakeSwap or any other V4 deployments. So PancakeSwap V4, even though architecturally it is different from how Uniswap has designed their V4, it is still designed in a way that hooks are deployed on Uniswap V4 can also be concurrently deployed on PancakeSwap V4. And so the architectural differences doesn't really affect you if you are a hook developer. And so the only time that you would want to or end up developing hooks that are specific to PancakeSwap is when you want to assess, express ideas that are that can only be executed on PancakeSwap V4. So for example, if you wanted to access zero slippage trading via a bin pool, that idea only sort of exists in bin pools, then you can develop hooks that are compatible with this type of pricing models on PancakeSwap V4. And so, if you're looking to do something that is slightly different from the XY equals a K model, you would then come to PancakeSwap V4 to do so. But otherwise, we don't force developers to choose, and we don't see why they should or want to have to choose.
Gotcha. That makes a lot of sense. I think for a lot of people in crypto, when they think of PancakeSwap, they may be still thinking of sort of like the OG BNB chain deployment, right? And in fact, that's just not the case today. You guys are on 9 different chains, including Ethereum, Aptos, Base, Arbitrum, and ZKSync. And that's like a pretty wide range of chains, both from like where they sit in terms of like L1, L2s, or also like sort of different VMs. So what drove the decision to go cross-chain? Because I would assume the PancakeSwap brand value is still strongest on this home chain, the BNB chain.
You're right. You're totally right that PancakeSwap's brand is the strongest on BNB chain. However, I think that taken aside, I think taking a broader view into where crypto is developing, the crypto world in general is becoming very multi-chain. And I think as crypto develops further, DEXs and DeFi platforms must be multi-chain as well. The way I see crypto is that it's on the development path of the internet. Eventually, we will all think and see a singular large platform that supports all crypto activity. But the infrastructure behind the internet, even today, is not that there is a single technological standard, powering your video, your image, your emails, right, your message passing. There are several different standards that all are behind the scenes, in if I were to put it that way. And so I think crypto is going to go in that same way, where there's a lot of change, but eventually it will just look like a singular interface to users. However, to become a key part of that multi-chain future, PancakeSwap has to expand multi-chain and has to be focused on where the users are and also where the technology is scaling towards. So our focus now is mostly on EVM and EVM scaling layer twos. And that's because we recognize that there is a strong developer-led culture on these chains. So something on a related note, in terms of expanding multi-chain, we also table a governance discussion allowing third-party teams to fork PancakeSwap and receive official recognition so that PancakeSwap as a protocol, we see that we can service more users on emerging standards and blockchains as well.
Wormhole is the leading interoperability platform for multi-chain bridges and applications. With over 1 billion messages sent and 40 billion in value transferred, Wormhole leads the industry in cross-chain message volume and total value transferred. If you're a builder, Wormhole has an extensive suite of tools and infrastructure to securely build multi-chain applications. You can use Wormhole to power DeFi, NFTs, governance, and so much more. And Wormhole supports over 30 blockchains and 6 different runtimes. Claim your unique Wormhole NFT just for 0x Research listeners today. Fill out a form, prove that you've listened to today's episode to receive a Pro app, and you'll get an email over the coming weeks to claim your limited edition NFT. I wanted to follow up there on something you mentioned and allowing third-party developers to fork. What does that process look like? Can anyone sort of permissionlessly fork the code? Or, for example, is it a slightly more like Uniswap model where if you want to fork the code, you need to go through like a DAO governance vote?
It is more so the latter. I think forking the code is not difficult, right? I think there have been many forks of many different protocols, whether it's DEX or DeFi. Where we think we provide value for other protocols that are trying to fork us, one is PancakeSwap, as a team, we are focused on technological development. So we're always trying to bring the latest and also to add on more things to PancakeSwap V4 as well as a DeFi platform that surrounds the DEX. But the other thing that we think we provide a lot of value to is we have built a brand name of trust around the PancakeSwap brand. And we are serving a large existing user base. And so recognition of a team that's officially working with us has had us look through how they fork their code and getting our official recognition via a DAO vote as well. And not just our, the kitchen, but our as in the cake token holders, I think is valuable, for various teams that are trying to build out their DEXs on their chains as well.
Following this sort of line of thought behind the multi-chain expansion, right? I think in some cases, you've seen protocol teams expand to new chains under a new brand. For example, Velodrome, Aerodrome. Or for example, you've also seen the other side of the equation where teams have expanded to new chains under the same brand, for example, Uniswap. And maybe like in between, there's like Unibot, which is Unibot on Ethereum, but then there's like Unisol on Solana. What do you think about those like few options? And would you explain like which one you like more? Or what's the rationale behind like just sticking with the core PancakeSwap brand across all of these different chains?
Sure. From my perspective, I think expanding via new brands and new tokens, if it's operated by the team, is not preferable. How we have done our expansion is to expand to each chain via the main PancakeSwap brand and under the same token. For this approach, we see this as the preferred approach because one, we are focused on the token that has is originally associated with PancakeSwap. We are not there issuing new tokens and trying to manage multiple tokens at once. We're trying to focus on building the PancakeSwap protocol and the Cape token. And so one, that there is that. And two, I think where the affiliate approach that we're coming in with, that does involve other teams forking PancakeSwap under their own brand name. But that is only on the basis that the PancakeSwap team is not running these forks. That's why we choose to officially recognize them after, you know, speaking with them. One of our experiences when we went to the first few chains is we realized that although crypto will be a multi-chain future, users should be multi-chain. Today, users are relatively siloed on their chains. For example, you know, users on BNB chain may not want to go to Ethereum because Ethereum just has a very high gas fees, right? So there is a point where I think each chain you go to, if you want to serve that chain's users and projects properly, you do need to invest sufficient effort, and you need to invest sufficient marketing and community efforts to those chains. And so for brands that are official forks of PancakeSwap, we do think it's better if they run their own brand, have their own team, run their own token, and that helps them serve their particular community better than if, let's say, PancakeSwap was in 30 different chains and trying to service, you know, 30 different communities all and 30 groups of protocols all under the same team that is running the main PancakeSwap brand.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. I'm in general not a big fan of sort of brand dilution, and I prefer like a single token and all of the value accruing to that single token rather than launching competitive tokens. Although like in some select few cases, maybe I can see like a reason for doing so. I wanted to shift gears a little bit here to DEX and more so DEX innovation, right? We haven't seen a significant amount of DEX innovation in recent years, and it feels like there's sort of cycles to it, you know, like every 1.5 year, a huge DEX innovation comes along, but it's not like a constant like stepwise innovation. It's always like a huge like jump in sort of what's possible on DEXs. And I guess the latest example of this is probably PancakeSwap V4 and Uni V4 and Uni X. Why do you think that dynamic sort of exists in terms of like a long time behind or sort of a long time between these like large amounts of innovation rather than like small incremental improvements?
I would disagree with the idea that I think innovation is always in giant leaps and that there hasn't been incremental innovation. I think the state of DEX innovation is that even between V3 and V4 for Uniswap and PancakeSwap, there have been a lot of attempts to try different ideas. The issue with, I think, what's perceived in crypto Twitter or in general public is that there just hasn't been a noticeable leap in adoption and a noticeable leap in benefits, as compared to, say, the transition from V2 to V3. And our team has been looking through many different ideas that have, occurred in the past 1 or 2 years. But, you know, to be fair, I think this perception comes because DEX innovation is a very difficult topic. At the tech level, there's a lot of reliance, technological reliance on developments that are sometimes outside of what the DeFi team can do. But also, there are a lot of attempts that just simply don't, become as big as Uniswap. So, I will name some that I think are relatively more successful, but maybe from the public's perspective, isn't really like the biggest innovation ever. So I think, for example, Maverick AMM did try a fairly innovative approach to liquidity provision where you don't have to keep changing how your liquidity is positioned. I would classify that as innovation as well in our space. But of course, it's not at the scale of Uniswap V3 or V4. So there are many of these ideas I think that are floating around. It's just that I think Uniswap has consistently found ways to make the big impacts more visible. And so I think this is where this perception comes from.
No, I totally agree with you on that. And I appreciate you pushing back. I do think like Maverick and how they sort of have these like automated liquidity vaults, and also a few other DEXs in the past year or so have sort of tried to improve upon various incentive models. And I do think that there's overall like exciting innovations happening in the space. Although probably Uniswap has the largest mindshare, but if you like look under the hood, there's still a lot of like fun experiments sort of being done. Sticking on the topic of sort of DEX innovation, I think one thing that with these like large upgrades, especially for example, right, like the singleton model and like the flash accounting, that's something, especially on the flash accounting side, that's only enabled by core protocol upgrades, for example, to Ethereum as part of Denkun, I think. And so the key unlock there for sort of like the flash accounting is transient storage, right? Do you think that these large DEX innovations is currently limited by upgrades and technological improvements to the underlying base layer, and that constraint will like always sort of exist?
I think that's true to a certain extent. So going back to my point about, you know, centralized exchange functionality and TradFi functionality, from the experiments that I have seen in the past 2 to 3 years, there have been attempts to put a lot of these, you know, let's say like limit orders on-chain, and there are some fairly successful implementations today. But I think the general limitation that there is a level of constraint at the core protocol level is true. So, for example, you know, the Denkun upgrade that you mentioned, that has allowed, you know, V4's upgrade. And correctly, you know, as you have noted, it's not something that DeFi teams are going to be able to do. So that protocol upgrade had to come before V4 could go live. But I think that most of the difficulties around implementing these features are around cost and scale. So and complex functionality does range, you know, from slightly complex to very complex. And today, ETH L2s and L1s, I think, are sufficiently cheap enough to try to implement some of these features at scale via hooks. So going back again to things like stop orders, limit orders, I think these are definitely not limited by protocol level upgrades. But bigger functionalities like using ZK to, you know, shield some of your information as you do trades and then back reference these, and then you need to store all data on-chain, that is still probably a little bit more challenging. So I think we do have to, you know, as DEX teams, we do have to try out more functionality via the hooks and to see what the limits are, especially in terms of, you know, on-chain execution, how much gas you actually pay for these things before really saying that, okay, it's we're limited by the core protocol.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes total sense. One thing that you sort of mentioned, sort of exploring the limits, right, and execution. One thing that I feel like a few DEXs have started to do is to go cross-chain, not in the sense of cross-chain deployments, but also realize that, hey, we have liquidity on all of these different chains, and so at some point, maybe we could become a bridge, right? And bridges as a space overall has evolved very rapidly, and a few DEXs these days are also sort of cross-chain bridges. And we have seen this sort of evolution of these bridges, DEXs, and everyone's moving to this like intent-based RFQ model. And I want to hear, does PancakeSwap have any plans to sort of explore the intent space? Or just more so, what are your general thoughts on intents?
Sure, sure. I find it very interesting that intents suddenly became like a new model within DEXs and DeFi. Because I think you know, what the narrative is worth, RFQ models have been around for a really long time. In fact, they have been around for years in this space. We at PancakeSwap tried an early attempt at an intent-based model last year in 2023 as well. Before this, you know, the term intent-based model caught on as a narrative on crypto Twitter. So what we did was slightly different. On our swap page today, we have a logic that helps users route through either the AMM or send RFQs to selected market maker partners. And we offer the best of these two quotes. So if you say, you know, trade $1,000, we'll compare for ETH as an example, we'll compare what the AMM is giving in terms of ETH and what the RFQ is sending back in terms of ETH for execution. And then we just give the user the users the better trade. So we didn't implement this at scale, but it's still available on Ethereum and BNB chain PancakeSwap, which allows us to, especially on Ethereum, offer most of the popular tokens without actually having a liquidity pool. Now, this intent-based model has its perks, which is, as I mentioned, you don't need a liquidity pool on-chain to service the trade, but it also has drawbacks. So I do think it's a good complement to AMMs for a DEX trading platform. So RFQs, you know, as you have mentioned, is actually a model that's, I think, a better solution for cross-chain swaps at this point, especially when we also speak to RFQ providers, you know, when talking about swapping a token on, let's say, BNB chain to a token like Ethereum and vice versa. But RFQ models don't have permanent and instant liquidity that AMMs have. So I do think over the longer term, these two will coexist. Although I personally do hope that AMMs overcome a lot of the you know, shortcomings that I've previously mentioned, and also, you know, find a way to use bridges in a way that you could always assess cross-chain liquidity instantly. But, you know, that's it. I don't really know whether that can be solved perfectly. And so for now, I would say that AMMs and RFQs will probably coexist for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I definitely agree there. And I hope that they can live synergistically with each other. Although I think a lot of that remains to be seen. Going to the slightly more theoretical side of things, right? You mentioned sort of like the limits of DEXs and whether, you know, we can solve a lot of the problems that AMMs have today. And I was curious about what your view is for the end game for DEXs and DEX architecture. Say like 10 years down the road, when we've gotten to like the theoretical limits of like blockchains and like what's possible with smart contracts, what do you hope DEXs and DEX architecture looks like?
Yeah, I think having run, you know, an early version of intent-based architecture and also the DEX architecture for quite a while, I do hope, you know, as I kind of said just now, that DEXs win out in the long run. The key problems with DEXs today I can see are profitability issues for LPs, which makes them less likely to put up big amounts of capital into the liquidity pools, which then limits their ability to execute large size trades. So today, if you wanted to trade $1 billion instantly, you really can't do so on a DEX very well, because one, there's not that much capital to execute instantly, and two, slippage is something that you will have to deal with, which is, you know, if you're dealing with large RFQ makers, you probably wouldn't have this slippage issue. So I do hope that we, you know, at PancakeSwap with V4 and future iterations, help to solve LP profitability issues and UI UX issues, which keeps users onboarded onto swapping and providing liquidity via AMMs, that in the future, AMMs will be large enough to compete with RFQs very consistently. And the, you know, again, the permanent availability of liquidity and the instant execution, I think, is an advantage that RFQs cannot have. And so I think if AMMs can resolve these key issues, there is a good chance that the very long term end game would be that DEXs might out execute RFQs you know, over like a large amount of capital and over a longer time. But again, I think this is assuming that a lot of issues get worked out over the next few iterations, whether it's bridges, liquidity, impermanent loss. So there are a lot of things to solve before we can get to that point.
Yeah, diving into the LP profitability issue a bit more, I think one of the hot debates right now is LVR, or loss versus rebalancing, or sort of top of block sex DEX arbitrage. And that's been a consistent pain point for liquidity providers, because a lot of value is extracted away from them when these arbitrages or searchers come in to sort of execute that arbitrage. Right? What are your thoughts on how that gets solved? Do you have just any thoughts in general around like LVR and solving LP profitability and what a potential solution looks like?
Sure. We are working on a solution right now that we haven't fully formed, but we do think the large kind of the direction of solving this is to balance the profitability of arbitragers and LPs better. So as you correctly described, the problem today is that LPs are suffering, I think, too much from arbitrageurs. Arbitrage is a normal activity. I don't think characterizing arbitrage as value destroying is accurate all the time. Even in traditional finance, you have firms that do HFT trading that essentially are arbitrageurs as well, at a very, very tiny, you know, clip. But they do provide liquidity in the market. So what we think the principal solution to fixing this is to make sure that LPs are benefiting more from SEC arbitrageurs as they are today, relative, you know, to they are today. So we are looking for and working on a solution that we think has potential, but it's not something that we have fully formed our you know, solution yet. So it's a bit early for me to kind of discuss this at detail.
Yeah, no, that's totally fair. I'll be excited to bring you on to sort of hear how you guys are tackling this, because there's a lot of teams in the space working on this issue. I wanted to shift gears here a little into sort of talking about PancakeSwap as a whole. There are hundreds of different chains today, and on these hundreds of different chains, there are at minimum probably like 5 DEXs or more. You know, a lot of these like new quote-unquote ghost chains, the only thing that they have is like 10 DEXs, which always lie at the top in terms of TVL. What do you view as PancakeSwap's sustainable competitive advantage in this multi-chain world filled with DEXs?
Yeah, good question. You're right. There are a lot of chains where there's just a bunch of DEXs executing trades. I think that is the fundamental need in a lot of these chains. So for you know, like we previously alluded to, forking contracts and setting up a DEX is not difficult. So having a DEX and having liquidity is not necessarily the hardest task. So I think PancakeSwap's sustainable competitive advantage is in the Kitchen's culture of execution. In 2023, you know, if I were to just list out some of the things that we've done, we've pushed out V3, we've expanded to 9 chains, we've fixed the cake tokenomics as well, from a hyperinflationary token to a deflationary token. We've introduced the vote escrow model, the V token model, which is now used to build altcoin liquidity on PancakeSwap. And then now, you know, we are shortly going to release a production version of V4. That's all happened in about 1 year. And so, you know, I think DEXs as a vertical, a crypto vertical, is quite understood. And I think everyone has an idea of what DEXs need to do in order to continue growing. So I do think the real sustainable competitive advantage is in the people that are working on these ideas and executing them to the best that they can. And I do feel that PancakeSwap's sustainable competitive advantage is in the people that we've brought together to execute these ideas.
Nah, I love to hear that. I think a lot of the time when you're in crypto, you're really backing the team and the founders, not necessarily just sort of the idea there, just because things move so quickly in crypto, right? You have to be on your feet. You have to always pay attention to the competitive landscape, and half the time you need to pivot and innovate or die, to be honest. One of the things I wanted to talk a bit more about, my mental model when I think about hooks, right, and how that, or what that really means for a DEX, is that it transforms the DEX from like a very simple DEX to more so like a platform, right? And on this platform, developers can launch much more customized DEXs. They can create these much more expressive liquidity pools. How do you think about turning PancakeSwap into a DEX platform, or like a DEX ecosystem, from what it is today?
I see. Yeah, I think for us, we've always seen PancakeSwap I think since last year, as more of an ecosystem development. Yeah, well, since mid last year or so. So I do think this is the way forward for all DEXs. And in terms of you know, ecosystem building, aside from V4, we have built a lot of other pieces that we think will interface with the V4 and the V4 hooks. So I'll just go through, you know, how we see this as a ecosystem effort rather than, you know, just pure V4 and V4 hooks alone. We've integrated with a variety of V3 position managers across DeFi. Those guys generally build out things to help you manage your concentrated liquidity position. And we've chosen protocols that have different approaches to how they manage the liquidity. So there's very little overlap in terms of the strategy. The VKIC thing, Vault Escrow model that I've mentioned, that's also an ecosystem build up for projects to come onto PancakeSwap. And then this V4, the hooks that we've built, we are looking for people to build and encouraging people to build. We want them to not just build hooks to, okay, like here's a limit order, here's a stop loss that, people will want to use. We are also hoping that they will look at what other parts of PancakeSwap have built, which are also, inspired by other good things in the DeFi ecosystem, and to get hooks that call on, position managers to position liquidity better, call on, our launchpad IFO to create better functionality when projects are launching tokens. So we do look at this V4 and hooks as an ecosystem effort, and not just here's an ecosystem of hooks that you can use for our swap and liquidity, but more so build functionality that uses that works with the rest of what the DeFi world needs and what users will need when they come to DeFi.
One part of sort of kickstarting this developer ecosystem and this ecosystem as a whole are incentives or various initiatives, right? And I know you guys have some exciting plans. So would you mind walking us through some of the initiatives you guys have in place to kickstart developer activity?
Sure. So we're going to ETH London, I think, on March 15th, which is the release date today. And so we'll be hosting our first hackathon to bring awareness to PancakeSwap V4 and to encourage developers to build hooks on V4. Because we will also be explaining the architecture that we've just went through earlier and how to build this. These hooks on PancakeSwap V4. But additionally, we are also announcing a $500K ecosystem fund that's dedicated to supporting developers to develop these hooks and to bring on more developer-related events to foster a community to build hooks on PancakeSwap. And primarily, we will also focus on rewarding the developers that build hooks that are used on PancakeSwap V4. So, this initiative will go to supporting devs that are truly in the ecosystem to build utility to promote more expressive LPing and trading activity. And on top of that, I think to allow value alignment, we also will allow developers, and I think we'll encourage developers to charge their own fees on their own hooks. And I think that's a way to encourage developers to see PancakeSwap V4 as a platform where they're not just writing code out of pure curiosity and the desire to contribute to an ecosystem, but also one that gives them financial alignment to develop tools that people will use, that people find valuable. And we do think that the market will gravitate towards hooks that have high usage. So this fund that we've set up is to get them to that point of widespread adoption.
That point about financial alignment is great to hear. And I think it makes perfect sense because I've always sort of saw a potential risk, at least in Uniswap V4, and hooks will likely be open source. It's probably not that hard to fork a hook. And at some point, you're going to end up with like 10 versions of the same hook, and you're going to need some financial alignment there in order to make sure that doesn't happen. In terms of financial alignment, there's one more thing I wanted to talk about, which is tokenomics. You mentioned just now that Cake used to be a highly inflationary token, and now you guys sort of have a deflationary mechanisms, such as burning a small percentage of trades, burning profit from perp trading, and sort of like various fun lottery ticket mechanisms. I would love for you to dive a bit more into those deflationary mechanisms and also dive into the numbers a bit more in terms of how that has been performing.
Sure. I think on the mechanisms, the sources of how we burn Cake, I will just go through that quickly because it's a long list of just products and percentages of how we use that to burn. But so on the product suite, PancakeSwap has about 10 odd products now, and on a number of these, we do collect fees. So the general mechanism is fees that we collect are real dollars that are spent by users for activities that they view the fees are worth for. And then we spend those fees on acquiring the KIC token back from the open market, and we send them to the burn address to effectively remove them from circulation. So at a high level, KIC used to be, and still is, supplied to mostly liquidity providers to cover their impermanent loss. And a portion of it also goes to stakers to encourage them to stake and participate in the VKIC ecosystem. Let's say this point last year, this day last year, KIC was inflating at approximately 20 to 25% a year. And at high level, that is quite unsustainable. And so in a year, what we did was we looked at what we could do with V3, looked at the LP rewards that we needed to give, looked at the entire tokenomics, and we decided to lower our tokenomics. And by October, I believe, late October last year, we've hit the point where PancakeSwap's KIC token was effectively net zero inflation. So that came to an end. And then now we are slightly deflationary. So of all the DeFi products that we collect fees and then we burn, in terms of numbers, right? I think you asked about numbers. I think we're net burning about $500,000 US dollars to about $1 million dollars of KIC tokens out of the market every month. So this means that even though we are emitting KIC tokens as liquidity mining rewards, as staking rewards, we are still on a monthly basis buying out all those tokens and then another half to $1 million tokens with real fees to deflate the KIC token supply. And I just want to talk a little bit about what comes after, because that's really what we've achieved. So with V4, as I mentioned, we are looking to be able to improve LP fee metrics, and so that subsidizes, reduces the impermanent loss even more. So, the fees will cover their impermanent loss even more. And so what we expect there is that as LP fees increase, we do think that less KIC tokens would be required to subsidize them to stay in the liquidity pools. And so we are going to push that deflationary tokenomics even more in the negative direction. And so that is what we expect to be able to do when V4 has launched.
Gotcha. No, I really appreciate the thoughtfulness that you guys have put into sort of like changing up the tokenomics, because obviously a lot of like protocols, not just DeFi protocols, have historically had high inflation, and a lot of them have struggled to bring that back down or balance it out. So it's nice to see you guys have managed to successfully tackle that. One more thing on sort of like tokenomics. One of the bigger shakeups in recent weeks has been the Uni fee switch proposal, where a percentage of LP fees is taken and then it's redistributed to Uni token holders who have both staked and delegated their tokens. And I wanted to hear your thoughts on the Uni fee switch proposal.
Yeah, I've been following that quite closely as well. I'm really glad that they are considering it. At a principle level, I think the protocol's success and the token should be connected. So this is a model that PancakeSwap is also doing. We do collect a portion of fees from trading out of the LP fees as well. And if you're a KIC staker, we do share some of the protocol revenue with stakers as well. So we do think this particular action is definitely in the right direction. And for a well-rounded utility token, I think this is an important part of the utility that should be, for a DEX or a DeFi project.
Gotcha, yeah. And I completely agree. As sort of a closing question, I wanted to ask, what are you most excited about in 2024 for PancakeSwap, or perhaps just DeFi and crypto in general?
Yeah, so I think V4 is the most exciting thing to me within the DEX space, within the DeFi space that we are working on. So I didn't mention this previously. So PancakeSwap V4 will be released as an open source code base. It will be fully open source. So the idea we have there, like you said, we want to see continued innovation on the DEX space. And so we think that our release of PancakeSwap V4 as an open source codebase would then encourage more developers to look at what we've already built and to, you know, if they wish to build on us as a hook. But if they see that, you know, what we've made is still, you know, that there's still something out there that they would like to improve upon, then that's something that they can also iterate on and, you know, deploy. So I am very excited about the level of innovation and experimentation that V4 will bring on. And I do think our contribution to the DEX space by making V4 open source, you know, will make for an exciting time in DEX development. So that's what I am personally, you know, working on this, very excited about.
That's great to hear that you guys are going the open source route. And I know that's not always the case for every protocol in DeFi. I wanted to give you the opportunity to leave any closing thoughts that you might have, or perhaps a call to action, and to end off with, where can listeners find you and learn more about PancakeSwap V4?
Sure. So as you are listening to this, we're probably right now at ETH London with a booth, and we'll be, you know, addressing the audience, and we'll have a workshop as well. So if you are in London and you're attending ETH London, do come take a look. And also, even though we are anonymous developers, we actually have shares now at the booth. So you can go find us. You know, we might not tell you our names, but, you know, we are definitely there. You can definitely speak to us about V4. If you're not there at the event physically yourself, you know, that's unfortunate, but there are a lot of other places you can learn more about V4. So if you're a developer, we have a landing page for developers to look at the code base that we've released, and also, you know, how to navigate PancakeSwap V4. And if you're a more general user, you're not looking at the code that much, PancakeSwap has a blog where we write out what we think about, you know, V4 in a more general sense, right? We're not talking so much about the technical details there. And so we do have a variety of different outlets, whether, you know, it's physical, it's online, for you to come and see and interact with V4. So, you know, definitely check us out, and, you know, whichever area you're interested in, whether it's hooks, protocol development, do feel free, and we do encourage you to connect with us and learn more.
Gotcha. And just as the last thing, could you share what PancakeSwap's socials are, where they can find you on Twitter?
Yep. And that's twitter.com/PancakeSwap for our Twitter account. And I can't remember offhand our Telegram link. I think it's t.me/PancakeSwap as well. But if I got that wrong, please do go to PancakeSwap.finance, and our links are all at the bottom left of the page.
We will put it in the show notes for all of you guys and all of the links that Chef Mochi just mentioned. But anyways, thank you so much, Chef Mochi, for coming on. This was a fantastic conversation, and I'm really, really looking forward to the overall launch of PancakeSwap V4, and all the best with the launch.
Thank you very much, Ren. And yeah, thank you for the questions and having me on your platform to talk about V4. Really appreciate it.
Anytime. Have a good one. We have teamed up with the Wormhole Foundation, stewards of the Wormhole Protocol, the leading interoperability platform powering cross-chain transfers for over 200 plus multi-chain dApps. Wormhole isn't just a bridge. It's the leading interoperability platform for multi-chain applications. So go and claim your unique Wormhole NFTs just for 0x research listeners today. Hit the link in the description to fill out a form and to prove that you've listened to today's episode and receive a PoApp. You get an email over the coming weeks to claim your limited edition NFT.